Hello, welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, the Aston Villa podcast. I'm Dan Bardell, as ever, joined by The Athletic's Aston Villa writer, Greg Evans, freshly back from Villa Park, or not so fresh, actually, because I think he's just had a nap. But Greg, good to speak to you again, but unfortunately, we'll be talking about a Villa loss, a real topsy-turvy game. I'm not sure how I'm feeling still about it, but hopefully you're going to come and provide us with some insight.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I think the game made me a bit tired, actually. You know, the one thing I know going to Villa Park these days is I'm going to see goals and another seven at Villa Park, which is crazy. But yeah, you know, four in the wrong direction, unfortunately. So not a positive result.
No, I mean, if you'd have told me at half time that we were going to be seeing seven goals, I'd have been thinking, oh, Villa have lost 7-0, because first half, just not really at the races at all. The moral of the story is I don't think you can give any team a 3-goal head start, let alone a team like Southampton, who are on absolute fire at the moment. And Danny Ings, who's also on fire, made it 4, and then Villa made a fist of it, but it was all too little too late, Greg.
Yeah, as you say, look, you know, the fact that Villa have scored 3 goals and still not won the game, or still not come away with anything from a home game, you know, he's scandalous, really. But yeah, a tough old game to put into words, because it kind of feels like, yes, Villa made a lot of mistakes and, you know, there are clearly defensive issues, not just in defence, but more as a team. You know, the way Villa are actually defending as a team the last couple of games, I think it has been a bit of an issue. But then at the same time, you know, Southampton have only had 4 shots on target, scored all 4. I don't think Emi Martinez had another save to make, and to be honest,
no.
I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't think he could have done anything about any of the goals either. So it's a really strange result to put into words. And you know, 4-3, I mean, in any normal season, you'd probably have 1 7-goal result in, you know, any calendar season. But it just seems like we're getting 1 or 2 or 3 or even more of these results every sort of match day. It's crazy. You know, the goals continue to go in for fun. And that's why I just think that football's just a bit weird at the moment. It's not, you know, this is not a normal season, which is why so many goals are going in. And it's interesting, really, because, you know, I asked Dean Smith about it and I said, do you think the amount of goals will stop at some point? Because it just seems that there's so many. And he said, no, he thinks that the fact that fans aren't in there, and his take on it was that, you know, VAR has been introduced, obviously. So, you know, there's more penalties being given. The fact that because there are no supporters in the stadium, the officials can hear everything that the players are saying, and he believes that they're getting into the officials' ears a little bit. And I think he had a couple of issues with some of the free kicks that Villa conceded and the decisions that were given.
Since I've been going around the country peddling that Villa can do one thing that no other team can do in the country at the moment and defend, we're playing 7 goals. So let's start with that, because you touched on it about it's not just down to the defence, it's a collective thing. What's changed?
I think that given that Villa won the first 4 games, which obviously put them in a very good position, I think that they've started to become a little bit more open, a little bit more expansive. That willingness to keep the ball out the net has disappeared a little bit, not totally, because as I say again today, you know, that there were 4 shots on target, 2 of them were direct free kicks. So it's difficult to say that it's like an onslaught of shots, because, you know, it isn't. I think Villa only had to make 3 or 4 clearances in the whole game. You know, it was quite incredible, really, and compared to Southampton's, which, you know, was at least over 20. I haven't seen the figures, but I'll have to have a look. I just think that the team needs realigning a little bit. I feel like, you know, they've lost their discipline a little bit over the last couple of games. They're getting frustrated with decisions that won't go their way. You know, there was a couple of instances in the first half where Tyrone Mings had to calm down his team, and even one instance where he said, you know, you can't talk to the referee like that. I don't know whether it was to a Villa player or a Southampton player, but you know, it just gives you a flavour of what the game was turning into. It was very hostile out there, actually, and you know, Villa were getting frustrated with the way the game was flowing. But I don't necessarily think it's something, you know, anything to do with the defence. I thought Konsa probably didn't have as controlled and measured of a game as he has had in the previous 5. Just thought, you know, but just not quite at it, really. And, you know, maybe McGinn and Luiz didn't protect the back line as much as they have been in previous weeks either. So I felt almost like Villa in the first half were trying to play Southampton a little bit their own game. You know, Mings was sort of controlling them through the game, you know, explaining to Barkley when he needed to go and press and when for Watkins to press and when for Luiz to mark who. And it kind of felt like McGinn was following Ward-Prowse around a little bit too much in the first half. And then in the second half, when, you know, he got on the ball a lot more, didn't he? I think he only touched the ball two or three times in the first 20 minutes. And it almost felt like they were just trying to match Southampton up too much. But in the end, it was a complete mismatch in the first half because it could have easily been 5-0 at the break.
Yeah, I mean, Villa have essentially had two really bad halves of football. They've had the second half against Leeds and then followed it with the first half where to be 3-0 down is obviously a bad half. But I actually did think, attacking-wise in the first half, we looked decent at times, but I felt like we were getting caused problems on the break. So Villa would be attacking and McGinn would be in the box, Barkley would be buzzing around the box, Jack obviously floats around there as well, Watkins and Traore. So there was a lot of players up, and then I just felt like we got swarmed and overloaded, and that's why we were giving away set players, which ultimately we got punished for. I think Dean Smith said in his post-match that he tweaked the system in the second half and had McGinn and Luiz more as sitters and Barkley as a 10, so that tells me that we were playing a 4-3-3 in the first half. Is that how you saw it?
Well, yeah, to an extent. I didn't see too much of a change in the second half, to be honest. You know, I felt just like Southampton, you know, just sort of kind of lost their shape more than anything. I don't think it was a fact of Villa doing anything particularly different that made the difference. And I think the goals late on flattered Villa almost. You know, the scoreline certainly flattered Villa. It wasn't a one goal margin game. You know, Southampton were the clear winners. But yeah, as I said at the start, I just feel like it just needs realigning a little bit. It's like everything they were doing well during the back end of Project Restart and the start of this season just feels that they're not quite at 100%. They're just some silly fouls, silly free kicks, you know, the handball from Cash on the edge of the area. That wouldn't have happened if Villa didn't get back into their shape quickly enough and he didn't have to take one for the team. It's just kind of trying to find that balance again, really, because that's something we spoke about at the start of the season, wasn't it? You know, we said that Villa have mastered the balance of defending and attacking. You know, they've kept it very tight when they needed to. And then gone and hit teams on the break and been ruthless up top. They're not quite getting that at the moment because, you know, that back to basics formula has disappeared.
Yeah, and up top, Watkins wasn't heavily involved. Again, it's by no way a dig at him because you can't say, oh, he's going out there and missing loads of chances. The chances aren't really coming. So that's probably three games in a row now where I'd say Watkins has been marshalled out of the game and shackled. It was good that he took the penalty. He didn't actually show it on TV, but it looked like Jack was going to take the penalty. I'm not sure what transpired after that, but it was Watkins that ended up taking it. Hopefully you can shed some light on that. Did Jack just give the ball up to let him have a goal, or did Watkins demand the penalty? I'm not sure what happened.
Jack picked up the ball, put it on the spot, and then he almost like he had a change of heart and just allowed Watkins to have it. You know, it's interesting really with Watkins as well, because something I'd mentioned previously is that he hadn't gone longer than three games without a goal for the past 18 months. And he kept that record intact today by scoring in the 93rd minute or whenever it was. So look, you know, that'll be good for his confidence, I think. You know, another goal to add to his tally. Hasn't quite worked for him the last three games. It's been tough for him, and I think we're at the stage now where we were almost preempting this round about deadline day, weren't we? We were thinking, if it wasn't going so well for Watkins, what can Villa do? Who can they bring on from the bench? And you know, look at Callum Wilson scoring 6 goals in 7 games for Newcastle already this season. And you just think, imagine if Villa did get him and, you know, the two of them are available. It feels like Dean Smith's a little bit reluctant to use Keenan Davis at the moment. You know, it's not hard to understand why, if that is the case, because he's never had a regular run of games and goals as a Villa player, and they're very short, aren't they, in attack of alternatives. And Bertrand Traore going off injured after 30 minutes, you know, you could see the frustration on Dean Smith's face because it's the first time he's tried something different, you know, the first time he's dropped Trezeguet this season. And then you look at it and you just think, well, you know, what can he do now? The one change he's made and he's having to revert back to basically plan A after 30 minutes, and And Trezeguet had four really good opportunities and didn't score any of them.
Yeah, I thought, to be fair to Trez, I thought he came out of the game with some real credit. I thought he was one of Villa's better performers, and he does pop up at that back post quite well. And on another day, he'd have probably have had a couple of goals. But Villa do have other players on the bench, like Davies, like you said. And I've got to be honest, I didn't think McGinn and Barkley were great today. And that's four games in a row now that Conor Hourihan hasn't got on the pitch off the back of a goal and assist. So he'll be very, very frustrated. Do you think he could have changed up the midfield? Because we saw how important set players were in that game from a Southampton point of view. I don't think our set players are great without Conor, if I'm being honest. Do you think there was a case for him to come on, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, we're watching the set plays quite closely, actually. I think the Villa have got very creative in their set plays, and I think, you know, but Traore had a really good chance early on.
Yeah, that was well worked.
I thought that was well worked, you know, clearly one off the training ground. I thought that, you know, one of the other corners that they had early in the first half, Barkley and Grealish mixed it up quite quickly, and, you know, the two of them looked very exciting early into the game. So I don't think Villa are actually missing too much from Hourihan not playing in terms of set pieces. I've said this at the start, you know, I felt he was very unlucky to lose his place after the Fulham game. You know, Villa started the season well, won the two games that he played with, that he started. Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe it is time now after a couple of defeats to reintroduce him. And you look at McGinn, for example, in the first half, wasn't quite at it. Much better in the second half. Barkley had flashes, you know, in and out. But Barkley, you know, he's quite similar to Hourihan in terms of what he will bring to the team. You know, it's a case of he's got that goal threat like Hourihan has. And if they don't get the goal, then, you know, you're questioning, what are they doing for the team? So, look, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think the expectations are so high now after four wins on the bounce. If Villa had won maybe one or two of their first four games, and then, you know, going into this game, it's a case of, okay, you know, might win, we might not. We stayed up by 1 point last season, so, you know, we're doing quite well, aren't we? We're not in the relegation zone, we're not in much trouble. But the fact that Villa have been in a position where they could go top of the league, and it just feels like expectations have massively increased. And we've got to remember where Villa are at. You know, they've been promoted for one season. They stayed up in the division by 1 point. And, you know, we're now moaning because the club have lost two games in a row. It's like we've got 12 points out of 18 points, still in the top six, and it just seems that expectations have gone so high up, it's ridiculous. But I feel like there's a cause now possibly for a change. And does Hourihan come in for Barkley or McGinn, or do you look at it and think, well, the two of them, both on their day, if all three of them perform to the best of their abilities, you'd still always have Barkley and McGinn, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt in the pecking order, Connor's next after them. But I think for him not to have come on in four games, especially the last two, when Villa have struggled, let's be honest, I think I'd be asking questions if I was him sat on the bench, especially what he did to the back end of last season and early on this season as well. One thing that's slightly concerning me about Villa, Greg, is that we had that lovely 8-game run. Lovely. We were all happy doing podcasts for 8 weeks with Villa and B and in eight. Yeah. But Villa went ahead in all those games. It seems like as soon as we go behind, one goal suddenly becomes two and three. And today, obviously, it became 2-3-4. Is that something you're concerned about?
That is one of the major concerns, I think, now, because what Villa were doing so well previously when they were, you know, back to basics that I'd mentioned, is that they were keeping it very tight, you know, almost playing for a 0-0 and then using, you know, the counter-attack to maybe go and grab a goal, but basing, you know, their whole performance on let's keep it tight and not concede, and if we can get anything else, then it's a bonus. It seems very much now like when Villa need to go chasing that goal and they open up that little bit more, it leaves them open for more. And, you know, that's a real concern because, you know, it's all about shape and discipline and organisation, isn't it? It's a case of, you know, when you lose that goal, do not go gung-ho and try and get it back. You know, just try and take stock for 3 or 4 minutes, see where you're at, and then build patiently from there. And it feels like that's something that the team have still got to learn. And it's still early days for this team. You know, that they've brought, you know, the player introduced 3 or 4 new players into the team already, haven't they? Outfield players. So still finding their feet as a team. And it's just something they've got to learn and build on.
Yeah, it just feels like game management over the time we've been back in the Premier League. It feels like game management hasn't been clever enough, because in that game, you make sure you go in at worst 2-0 down at half time. You don't then give away another free kick in a dangerous area and go in 3-0, because you're giving yourselves too much to do. You go in at half time 2-0, you feel like you've got a chance in the game. 3-0, it just felt like curtain. So like I say, when we concede, it just always feels to me that we have to then go on and concede another one almost immediately, and then today another one straight away again after that. So game management has been a problem for pretty much our entire spell back in the Premier League so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is fair to say. Last season it wasn't great, was it? You know, they dropped a lot of points from winning positions early into the season.
Yeah, we seem to have nailed that aspect now, which is quite good.
Look, you know, the case now is when they go behind, can they fight back and get those points? There was a graphic that was put up on Sky Sports on Saturday. I was watching one of the games, and I think it was, Wolves and Tottenham were quite high up in terms of the amount of points recovered from winning positions. And there was another team at the top, possibly Liverpool. I think it was a Liverpool game I was watching. And it was six or seven teams, and all those teams were higher placed teams. So it's really tough, isn't it, in the Premier League? You forget that. If you go one goal behind, it is, you know, genuinely tough to get two goals in the Premier League and get back on top. So I think the fact that Villa are still not finding it too much of a problem to score goals is a bit of a bonus. You know, the way they finished, got a couple of goals late, admittedly, but still three goals in, and most normal days that would be enough to win them the game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much credence you give to expected goals, but Southampton's expected goals today was absolutely nowhere near four. It didn't even get to one, so they won't come up against a team that will score four goals out of pretty much nothing every single week. So if they can keep the momentum going in front of goal, and scoring three in the second half will actually do us no harm at all going into that game at the Emirates next Sunday against Arsenal. But before we talk about the Arsenal game, Greg, I want to just talk about you a little bit. I think you did probably your best piece for The Athletic last week with Luke Neal. It's a really, really interesting and in-depth interview with the former Villa striker. Just talk to us a little bit about it.
My best piece? So that's very kind of you to say.
I would say so. It's a low bar, mate, but yeah, I would say that was your best one.
On a serious note, it was one that I'd been trying to get hold of for a couple of years, really. Been trying to tie down Mr. Nilis, you know, for various reasons. He hasn't wanted to do an interview previously. You know, he's been in and around different jobs as an assistant manager. But, you know, eventually I got him and he was great, you know, very, very willing to talk about his Aston Villa days. I made it very clear to him that, you know, I knew he had spoken a lot about his time at PSV. And, you know, for those listeners who don't know too much about him, he was a world-class striker, an absolute joy to watch. You know, if there's one thing you do today, go and have a watch of his YouTube reel, because his goals are brilliant. You know, there are free kick specialists and free kick kings, and, you know, he's on that next level because he scored so many brilliant free kicks and so many brilliant goals. And, you know, the fact that the original Ronaldo said that he was his favourite ever strike partner kind of says it all, really. And Ruud van Nistelrooy, you know, another strike partner of his, says the same. So I made it very clear to him that I didn't want to talk about his PSV days or his time in Belgium or Holland. It was just focused on Villa. And, you know, the fact he was only at Villa for 3 or 4 months, there were only a limited amount of memories, of course, because it's such a short period. But he went into a lot of detail about his injury, you know, about how he was so excited about playing for Villa and playing in the Premier League. And, you know, anybody who followed Villa in 2000 will remember that fantastic goal against Chelsea. And that was just the start of what possibly would have been a nice career for him at Villa. But the injury was horrendous, and you know, after that injury, he never kicked a professional ball again. And, you know, he went through a really hard time, and explains all that in story. So it's well worth a read, it for those who haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great read for Villa fans. I think it's a great read for football fans in general. I saw a few fans of other teams commenting in the comments section on The Athletic. It's worth saying at this point that you can sign up to The Athletic at the moment for just £1 a week, and you can read all Greg's previous Villa pieces, including that excellent interview with Luke Neal. So just go to theathletic.com/VillaPod, and as I say, you can sign up for £1 a week. I would say that's a very, very good deal. It's easy for me to say, but I would say that's definitely worth it. Have you got anything else coming up, Greg? Because it's difficult with the second album's always the most difficult once you've had a hit. Yeah. What have you got coming up next?
No, nothing immediately on the horizon, but there'll be something in November. I'm working very hard on a couple of long term projects, so just be patient. I can't produce something brilliant every day.
No, and also we're going back into lockdown again, so we might well be on the hunt for more podcasting interviews with former players, because last lockdown we had a pretty good run of getting ex Villa players involved, didn't we?
Yeah, he's mad really, because I was having a look back, and that period during lockdown, it feels like a little bit of a blur. It almost feels like it wasn't in this calendar year, but it was only half a year ago almost. It was brilliant to get so many of the former players, Tommy Elphick and Mile Jedinak, James Chester, Wilfred Bouma was great one as well. He had his injury problems, didn't he? And we got him on. That was one I really enjoyed, and lots of others as well. So yeah, there'll be a lot of podcasts that people haven't listened to that will probably be fitting for them during the lockdown period. So yeah, we'll have to reshare them, Dan.
Good seller. Yeah, if you are new to The Athletic, then new to this podcast, then go back through and check those out, because there was a batch of good interviews with ex-players. I mean, the fact we went to see Thomas Hitzlsperger in Marbella, and that was this year, that's ridiculous in itself, because that feels decades ago.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? I just looked at how Stuttgart are doing. Doing really well. I think they're up in fifth or sixth in the Bundesliga. So, great to see the ex-Villa, fans' favourite, who's now the CEO at Stuttgart, doing so well. We got three podcasts out of that, didn't we?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we did well. We were in Marbella for 23 hours as well. We didn't even spend a whole day. Did well. It's good to see him doing well, because he's a clever guy and a savvy operator.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's just finish by talking about the Arsenal game next week, because I said before we came on, I actually think that's kind of an ideal game for Villa now, an away game, less fancied. People will expect Arsenal to win. They've just won at Old Trafford against Man U, and I think being able to play on the break and counter will actually suit Villa.
Yeah, it could work into their favour, couldn't it? Arsenal seem to be getting it almost all together, don't they, now? So it's going to be a tough game. But I think that will work into Villa's favour, as you say. Going there as the underdogs, a little bit of less expectation. And Villa will probably want to sit back a little bit and maybe revert back to their old tactics of just going back to basics. Keep saying those three words, but it's just something that works so well for Villa. So, let's see. Obviously, they've got to show some enterprise up at the Emirates to threaten Arsenal. But I think you're right, actually. You know, it might just be a game that suits them.
Yeah, because I feel like today, Southampton, that wasn't the ideal follow-up after the Leeds game at home to play against another high-energy team that have been playing that way for a few years now, that are well-drilled under a manager they've had for a while. I feel like that wasn't the ideal follow-up to Leeds. So I feel, for some reason, I don't know why, I could be completely wrong, but I've just got in my head that this is a good time for Villa to play Arsenal. It's the right kind of game for us.
Yeah, no, I take your point totally. And I mean, just one final one on Southampton. It's just that team's been together for quite a while now. They're building something really special there. And it just shows that, if you know, the continuity and stability, that if you stick by a manager who you believe in, you can even lose 9-0 and still turn it around. And you know, that's what Southampton are doing. And hardly seen Theo Walcott in the game today. You know, didn't really do too much, but he's come in and just fitted into that system, you know, quite effectively. That there are various things that he did that would have worked quite well, but you know, it seems that every single player in that system knows exactly what they're doing. You know, that 4-2-2-2 formation works really well, all complementing each other. But three big injuries they suffered today, so you know, it'd be interesting to see how they bounce back from them.
Yeah, and I mean, we were saying exactly the same stuff about Leeds last week. Someone comes on as a sub and he just fits in. They had a few injuries and it didn't seem to matter because they just all know what the manager wants. They all know how to slot in. So yeah, I think two really tough games for Villa. I think it is important to have a bit of perspective even. And I'm more positive about our chances next week at the Emirates. And we've had a few results at the Emirates over the years, and it'll be funny to see Martinez that one, but it'd be a
really big day for him. I know there's no supporters in there, so it would have been even more, you know, special for him with all the fans in there. But he had a long time at, you know, 11 years at the Emirates. We'll know all the people at the club still. Obviously, it was only a few months ago that he was playing at the Emirates as the Arsenal goalkeeper, so it will mean a lot for him. Not great coming on the back of conceding four goals, although admittedly could not have done anything about any of them. So he's been one of the real bright sparks of the season, hasn't he? Feel like Villa have got a, you know, fine goalkeeper in him.
Greg, it's always good to talk to you after the game. I imagine we'll be doing the same next week after Villa's trip to the Emirates. So I hope you have a good week and get yourself a follow-up article, because you got to follow up that Nillis one.
I'll see what I can do, mate. Cheers, Dan.
Cheers.